I'll give you a correct address, but you have a fire in a one-story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by
125.
We're getting to traffic control. Squad 5, Squad 5. I'm with the 273-273. I'm with the battalion, Team 18 Battalion. With the 273-273.
Good evening and welcome into Engine House Training Blog Talk Radio. We had a show scheduled for this evening with everybody coming back at the beginning of the year, but some are on overtime, and then we had an issue with some that have COVID and being able to speak for a long time. So we're going to take it back into some of our old truck company podcasts. Hope you enjoy it. Stay safe.
Hello, welcome to Engine House Training Podcast. Just going to do a quick question and answer show. We had a question come in wanting to elaborate a little bit more on our search and rescue podcast. I don't have the name who sent it, so we'll follow up and with you later and get this link to you when it's out. Jason Hovelman, one of the owners of Engine House Training, sent this to me, so we'll get right into it. He is interested in hearing how, why, and when you size up conditions to decide your tactics. That's the first part, sizing up conditions and tactics. And also, if you guys are using oriented man or just splitting up and searching independently or split search. He's aware that it's very situational, so it may be difficult to answer. And then he left a raving review to our three-part search and rescue podcast series, which if you guys haven't listened to yet, please go back in iTunes and listen. We would appreciate it.
So real quick, is the how, why, and when, is that related to is it search and rescue specifically or overall tactics?
Yes.
You know what? Let's cover both. Let's talk about our initial size up. You could do it, Jared, from what you're sizing up and looking for when you're deciding tactics, being a company officer. And Tim and I can do it when we're talking about backstep firefighters. Then we'll go in more in depth on the search and rescue part.
Sure. So the initial size up. What's that?
You want to lead us off, Jared?
Sure. The initial size up, obviously your windshield size up, you're just given that brief report that everybody else can kind of get that mental picture of what they're coming into. So you're kind of given that big, broad, general, there's nothing really that specific in there, that general size up. But then to follow that up, we do a 360 report. So as soon as you've made your windshield size up, if you can get a 360, if you can get it on your drive in, even better, you know, your 270, whatever you want to call it. But we give an additional report, and then that additional report will then obviously have more specifics into it. So searchable spaces, you know, what level of fire involvement and where, ventilation possibilities, if, you know, if you can call it. But you just get into the more specifics. I think for the tactics, initially, yeah, you have to be thinking about that, but at the same time, you have to give those generalities for everybody else to jump in on so that they can get their tactics put together too. We run a guideline-based system, so we know that first do is doing this, second do is doing that, third do, first do truck, second do truck, whatever the case is, it's all pretty much preset. So for us, our tactics are pretty well, or I should say our strategies are pretty well set. And then it's left up to the individual company to determine those tactics and how they're going to go about that. You know, if we call, just for instance, if we call for ventilation, we don't tell them when, we don't tell them where. That's their job to decide. So like he said, it is, you know, it is kind of broad. There's I don't know. It is kind of general, hard to get into without getting into exact scenarios. But I think the company officer perspective has to be a little bit bigger than the firefighter perspective. You know, one of the things I like to talk about is I want my guys coming off the truck so comfortable with what they're doing and what they're about to do that they're looking at the variables, that they're not so focused on pulling a line or grabbing a certain tool that they can't think of anything else, so that they're able to do their own size up and take in what they need to take in order to carry out their specific tactic. So I think that's saying a whole lot in general, nothing is specific.
That was perfect. I think a lot of focus is put on company officers and chief officers and their size ups. I think you hit the nail on the head. We're going to get Tim's perspective here in a second. That you should be so good and so confident in your fundamental task and skill set on the fire ground, whether it's throwing ladders or stretching a hose line, that you can, as a firefighter, you can do your own size up while you're doing whatever your assigned task is, walking up to the building, you know, bringing ladders, bringing tools. So, Tim, why don't you talk a little bit about what you're looking for as a backstep firefighter for your initial size up, and I'll finish it off with anything I want to add or anything missing.
Yeah, it's kind of like Jared said, it's super vague, but what I wrote down and what I got out of the question was how, why, and when. So how I would size things up, a lot of that is based on the conditions that present themselves and my past experiences in similar situations. So experience does come into play. A 20-year captain and a 2-year captain are probably going to do some things differently based on past experiences and good experiences and bad outcomes that they've had before. So that's some of the how. Why, I guess, would be the primary mission there. If you have confirmed people trapped, I'm going to do things a little bit differently than if there are no confirmed people trapped. Obviously, we're still going to do some searches and stuff like that, but it could lay out a little bit differently. And the when is always, things are always evolving, things are always changing. So there needs to be a continuous size up going on. You know, if you're starting to lose a building, you need to make sure you know when to say when and get out and make sure you keep everybody safe. So the win of the whole thing would be an evolving thing. It's never just, hey, we're going offensive and that's the way it's going to be the whole time. You got to keep changing and monitoring how conditions are and what you need to do differently to get a better outcome.
No, absolutely. I think the one thing that gets taken for granted a lot of times is we say size up as a term. Size up is continual. It's not a windshield and a 360 update.
Right.
Size up is literally the entire time. There's no difference between the initial and the continual. You're constantly evaluating what's going on around you, what the scene is doing, how it's developing, how your strategy and tactics are taking effect or not. It's continual.
Yeah, you know, we'll hear all the time, like, hey, you know, chief, we got water on the fire. Well, that's a size up. I mean, you're continually telling people what's going on outside of the building, and then that chief is giving you feedback. Hey, there's still a lot of fire in the back part of that building. You need to go figure out what's going on back there. So,
you know, and I think it's kind of going – it's been said numerous times, but things when we're sizing up as company officers and firefighters, you know, hopefully – everyone on the truck at a minimum gets to see 3 sides of the building before they go in. Most places it's up to that first in company officer to check the back of the building as well. Firefighters might have tasks that may or may not allow them to see that before they make entry. But, you know, things we're looking for is building layout, windows, doors, the big stuff, fire conditions, and all that comes with going to fires, paying attention, and not a lot of times newer people have a tendency to focus on the windows or doors that fire's blown out, and they're less likely to take in everything else around them. You know, you might have fire blown out of 2 windows on a second or third floor, and a window away, there's a civilian hanging out there. If you're just staring at the fire, you might miss that civilian. Or something that's not as big a deal is you might miss a fire escape or another way out that could come into play later on. So that's pretty much all I would have to add to that question. I don't know. Kind of one of those things that we could spend all day and do scenarios. I hope this answers the question we had coming in. If you want us to elaborate any more, feel free to reach out, send a message, or leave a reply, and we'll do another quick podcast and answer it. You guys got anything
to... Yeah, I do have two quick things. One thing that I harp on a lot with my guys, and I completely left that out on my first one, is pre-arrival size up. So for us, you know, we get dispatched to a certain location, and I know this house is in a certain neighborhood. I can tell you with almost 100% certainty what that house looks like and how it's laid out before we ever get there because of medical runs, you know, assistance runs, whatever the case may be. Just the fact that I was in the neighbor's house and they're the same. You know, a ranch-style home, we've all been to those. So pre-arrival size up, that's for everybody in that truck. That's for the operator, that's for the company officer, that's for the firefighters in the back, knowing, hey, I'm going into a 1,000-square-foot structure. It's a ranch style, so it's either split bedroom or it's not, yada, yada, yada. You already have those things in your head. And then to switch gears just a little bit, but on the same topic, we did a class with Task Force One, and one of the things that continually kept coming up during the command portion that is undeniable, and I'm a huge proponent for it, is just that gut feeling. What is your gut telling you? I think it goes back to what Tim said, what both of you guys have said about experience and what have you seen in the past, blah, 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 blah. For me, my gut is huge. I follow my gut a lot. I mean, literally I follow my gut because it's extended out in front of me. So, you know, I have no choice but to follow. But
light duty will do that to you.
Yeah, light duty has made me heavy duty. But it's one of those things, like you can't explain it. I don't know how to put into words, follow your gut. I don't know how to do that other than just sometimes it's experience. Sometimes you don't have to have the experience to have that gut. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to put it into words. Maybe one of you guys can do it better.
No, I agree. And that's something that you don't really talk about much. And it doesn't really, you can't teach it either. But, man, the human intuition is really, really strong. I mean, if you got a bad feeling about something and you keep going and you're not feeling any better about it, man, it's probably a pretty good indicator that you're doing something you don't need to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like people might blind themselves with book knowledge sometimes and say, oh, well, there's this, and this going on, so we can't do this. Well, that's not always the case because everything is so different based on the situation. You're using your gut and following your instincts, so it usually won't lead you too far wrong.
Usually.
I think that also kind of ties back into, you know, we should have confident enough leaders in the fire service, company officers and chief officers, that if you have a new guy or a private or, you know, you need to teach people to speak up. If you see something or you got a gut feeling or something doesn't seem out of place, you know, teach people it's okay to say, hey, Cap, you see this, or, you know, Lieutenant, you see this, or whatever. You know, they might have missed it. We're all human. We all make mistakes. You may get told, you know, shut up, no. But more likely than not, you might point something out that no one else has seen. And I think that all kind of ties together with having confident and comfortable leaders that know their job and are willing to listen to the people that are around them. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I agree with everything when it comes to sometimes – you got to trust your instincts, trust your gut, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I think we could do a whole, and I'm sure somebody has, but you could do a whole podcast just on, you know, allowing people the ability to talk or take, I don't want to say criticism, take advice, in, but you know what I mean, where you could be flexible, I guess, maybe.
And you could do all that in a respectful way, you know.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of a culture thing. You know, if you create a culture of critical thinkers, then you're going to have to allow them the opportunity to voice. Otherwise, you're going to stifle them and muffle them, and not to get in and go off on another subject. But like I said, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, we could talk about that for a while. I mean, I think for so long we were robots that we're kind of in a transition in the fire service that you just did stuff because that's how they've always done it. And now I think we're moving, especially at a recruit level, to having people understand the why. And I think that's going to be better long-term as a whole for the fire service.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I did want to point out, I'm glad you brought up pre-arrival scene size up. That is incredibly important for later arriving companies. You know, that's when you need to not be laughing and joking, but you have a plan, you know whereabouts, where you're going to arrive, and you should have an idea if you're SOG-based, like the majority of the departments around here, and you mentioned you were, Jared. You should have an idea when you're going to arrive, and you're coming up with a game plan, but you can learn a lot and basically know what you're going to by listening to the radio of the companies that arrive first, if those initial company officers do a good job of sizing up and putting that out there. So I'm
right.
Glad you hit on that. I think that's a very important thing to talk about and bring up is when you're second, third, fourth through, you know, have that radio turned up and listening to what you're getting yourselves into, and you'll know what's going on based off the radio traffic.
Yeah, and to couple that with the SOG and the mentality behind that, I think the beauty in that, especially for us, is you remove a lot of mundane radio traffic. So, if I'm third to engine, I know what first and second are doing. So then if I hear something on the radio, I'm going to listen, because they're calling an audible. Something is not normal, so they're calling an audible of some sort. So then that cues everybody else in. So, you know, we all hear the people in the departments that like to hear themselves talk on the radio, you know, or you just have this imaginary, everyone standing in a single file line while one person barks out orders for everybody. You know, so being SOG-driven and having those things in place prior to, when that audible is called, then everybody kind of cues in a little better.
Yeah, it's great. It works great for us. Our company is literally, say the company they are, and then, you know, first in's a more detailed size up, but everything after that's one word, you know, on the scene truck, on the scene backup water. And in the SOGs that we study and have to know, you know, really all the time, but really hot and heavy your first year, all those individuals on those trucks have assigned tasks. And
right.
In one word, everybody knows, you know, two guys are doing the outside work, two guys are doing the inside work. You have your forceful entry team, you have your ladders team. And you just turned all that radio traffic into one word. That's a great point. I know in St. Louis County, they have switched to a countywide SOG now. So even it is possible to do it. People unfamiliar with the area, it's like 42 or 48 individual departments out there. At one point, they're all operating on their own SOGs, and now countywide, they're all operating the same. And from what I understand from friends and stuff, things are going a lot better at fires because everyone knows what everyone's going to do.
Oh,
to having to wait to get told what to do or check in with the chief or the first in captain, you know. They got enough to do when they get there that they're not going to be able to control everything. So,
yeah, that's incredible.
All right. So before we go into sizing up and conditions, different search techniques, let's briefly talk about, back to the original question. You want to know if we're using oriented man, splitting up, and searching independently, or a split search? So basically we'll run through the differences real quick because we hit it hot and heavy. You know, predominantly where we work, and this is, I would think, fire service as a whole, we're doing an oriented search as a team, independent of the hose line. It means usually a hose line's being stretched or is stretched, and we're going in as a search team, whether it's two or three, four, it all depends on your manpower. There's a lot of variables. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to spread out. We're not searching independent of each other, but on the same token, we're not holding on to each other's ankles and crawling along the wall. We may spread out, meet in the hallway. I'll take a bedroom. You know, Tim could take the other bedroom, and we're going to meet back here. I mean, we're still in voice contact. We can holler at each other. We're not going to be in one room of the house while, you know, Tim's in the basement and I'm on the top floor. I'm not too sure. Maybe you do a little more of this. What he means by split search, that's kind of a split search is where, you know, we're partnered up and we go into different rooms, or I just monitor conditions in the hallway and send Tim in a room and we might switch the next room. I'm going to go with that. If we don't answer your question, like I said, just reach back and ask again.
A couple things I wrote down is this could be a terminology issue. What is split for you? What is split for us? You know, could be different, like you just said. And then two, I think the bigger one is oriented. Oriented means a lot of different things. To me, one person can be oriented on a wall. One person can search a room oriented off of a ladder, VES style. So oriented means a lot of things. You know, somebody hollering at that person from the other side of the room, they're oriented. They're oriented to that person's voice. So there's kind of a big spectrum of what that actually means. And like I said, it could be differing for different people, different departments or whatever. For us, no search is unoriented, I guess, would be kind of a weird way of saying it. So regardless, you're oriented somehow by any means that I talked about just a second ago. But for us, split search. So some of it's dependent on the size of the structure. What are we going to? Are we going to a 1,000-square-foot ranch? Because if so, two guys can leapfrog those bedrooms and stay split the entire time and still be in voice communication pretty much. And stay oriented, because if I pull up, all the bedrooms are on the left side of the house, I'm oriented. And I know I've got a window in each one of those rooms, so, you know, having the bail or whatever, you're oriented. And it could be, you know, say your partner stays at the doorway and throws a box light down on the floor of that door, and then he goes to the next bedroom, and that light signifies that he's moved on to the next bedroom. There's just lots of ways to accomplish those things.
Hey, Jared.
You getting a run?
Yeah. Remember that thought. I'm just going to pause this, and we'll have him edit it out later.
All
right. We're back back from a little short break. We're recording this while some of us are on duty. Jared, let's finish up your thoughts on split search, and then we'll kick it over to Tim and go from there.
Sure. I think lastly, I covered, generally covered it before. I think lastly, what we have worked out, like on my crew, if we get to a house that's a fairly large residential and, you know, it's going to have a great room or, say, a family room in the basement or something like that. When we go in, I'll call, hey, let's split. And all that means is I'm going right, my partner's going left. So we're staying in voice contact. We're staying oriented, quote, unquote, with one another. Even though we're not physically with one another. We're oriented and we're split searching the same area. Obviously when that area gets too big, too expansive, then, you know, then we'll change it up. We'll do something different. But, you know, like, again, it's just one of those scenario based situations.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, he sounds like, obviously he's in the business and he understands that there's a lot of variables to everything, just like everything we do in the fire service. I know I'm sitting here with Tim. Tim jotted down some notes, and we'd love to hear what you had to say.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to searches, like Jared said, everything's going to be oriented. I've never heard of anybody doing a disoriented search, at least on purpose. I think your members are going to they're just going to end up defaulting to the level of their training. Whatever you guys train on, whatever you teach, that's probably what you're going to come up with, and that's what those guys are going to default to. So you just need to make sure that you structure your training to be as fast and efficient as possible. If you teach guys in the academy to crawl on all fours and hold each other's leg, then that's what you're going to get because that's what people know. So you need to look at your training a little bit and see what you actually teach your guys in your academy, and then work on changing some of those things to make your guys fast and efficient, because at the end of the day, everybody just defaults to their level of training. I know that's mainly what we do. So,
along those lines, when we're training, I think, and some of this is NFPA, and you know, because people have done dumb stuff in the past, we do a real bad job of training our beginning firefighters. What do? We take them into towers, and they're searching wide open rooms under sometimes unrealistic conditions, and they're not getting a lot out of it. I mean, if we were going to do it right, we would pack these rooms full of stuff, you know, a modern bedroom, you know, all the way up to hoarder-type conditions, because that's what we're going to be working in most of the time. I mean, you're not going to go search wide open rooms. And if you do, it's going to make it pretty quick and pretty easy to do a search, in my opinion. So I think as a fire service as a whole, we can do a better job with training. That's not really that could be a subject for a different podcast. So how, unless you guys have anything else to add, I'd like to wrap it up by going back to where we first started when he wanted to know size up and considerations. Let me pull up exactly what he asked, and we'll go from there. But size up and considerations for search as itself, instead of general size up in the beginning, we could talk about how and why and when you size up conditions to size your tactics. And assuming by the question, are we doing a oriented man search, splitting up, or VES, or just any type of search techniques we've talked about over the course of the podcast that we've done in the past? You want to lead us off from the company officer perspective, Jared, and then we'll come back to Tim and I. And I do realize this could be never ending, but kind of your considerations are your go-to most of the time.
Okay, so frame up that question again for everybody listening.
So instead of just general size up like we started off the question, what are your size up and conditions for is what's going to drive your final decision as far as how you're going to have your members search based off, you know, the things we just covered with the splitting up the team and room-oriented and all that?
So it goes back partially to size up, even the windshield size up. As a truck officer or as the first new truck, I'm not looking at it strategically or tactically the same as the engine company. I need to be looking at it completely differently. I'm taking in the same information, but how that processes to my tactics is going to differ. So obviously, you know, life safety. I think it's easy to get caught up. I don't want to say gimmicks, or what's new and fun or whatever. And I say that because the other day I saw a video where an officer was doing his 360 and he calls out, "We need a VES on this window." And during the 360, that was one of about six windows that were okay. So what info did he get or what info did he receive that made him say that specific window? So I think taking everything into consideration, you know, do we want a VES? Are we met in the front yard by a homeowner or by a parent or by a neighbor, you know, saying, "Hey, so-and-so is in there," or, keep in mind that VES is a very specific tactic. It's not searching off of a ladder. It's a targeted search off of a ladder. So there's additional information that has to come in order to make that call. Are we going to VES multiple windows, just one? You know, what are we going to accomplish? So, you know, I think life safety, not ours, to clarify that. And then to throw a little asterisk in there, we're not talking about being, you know, Rescue Randy, cowboy firefighters, just go running into the bad stuff, okay? But civilians come first, period. That's all there is to it. They don't have the protective equipment we do. They don't have the air to breathe that we do. They don't have the time that we do, the resources that we do, the ability, and the list can go on and on and on. If they could save themselves, wouldn't they? So obviously they can't. So we have to look at it as in, you know, everything we're going to do is for them first. So searching is no different. Don't get caught up in the gimmicks of there's a vehicle in the driveway or there's a vehicle not in the driveway. Time of day says the person's at work or the person's at home sleeping. All of that's gimmicks at this point. Used to, it had its time and place. Anymore, it doesn't. So, you know, I think going into it, search closest to the fire out would be an easy general statement without getting too deep into anything. On how you're going to go about it. Look at it very objectively as what is the most dangerous scenario, situation, location of that victim. And we're going to start there.
Perfect. That's a good response. Everything you hit on, we've covered in our search podcast, and we covered it a little bit last night. On a Blog Talk Radio for Fire Engineering podcast we did. If you guys want to reach out and go to their Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio, it was last night, which is Wednesday, the 28th of November, would be the one you want to listen to. We addressed some of this stuff, not quite as in-depth as some of our other podcasts, just kind of a shameless plug there for us. Tim, what do you have to add as far as the last question?
I think the only things that really change for guys on the back step is going to be most days Jeff and I will be partnering up together. We're going to do, I guess you could call it an oriented, I guess you could call it a split search. Like Jeff said, he's going to go check left bedroom, I'll check the right. We'll meet back in the hallway, then we'll keep working our way down, whether we start at the seat of the fire and work back or whether we start, you know, somewhere else. That's mainly how most of our searches are going to go. The only time that's really going to change for us, like Jared said, if we meet somebody that says, "Hey, I have three kids in the back bedroom," then we're definitely doing more of a targeted search. We know where we're going to go start, and we're going to put all of our effort there and then work back the other way. So I think those are really the only two searches we do. We do a split search-oriented search kind of combo or a more targeted thing, and that's where you could throw VES in or, you know, all those other things where you have a specific thing that you're going for. But most of the time, we're just looking to clear a building, and when we're doing that, we just kind of split up and do what we can to get it done as fast and safe as possible.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of stats out there, you know, that say where victims are located and where they're at. You're going to hit those points, you know, the points of egress. Okay, well, typically that's where we're going in, you know, as an egress path. So you're hitting some of that by proxy.
Yeah, and, you know, the most common ways of travel truly is going to be searched as the engine moves their line in there. And then we're going to search everything off of that. I do want to point out, because a lot of people get confused, and it was kind of a focus last night. 99% of the time, we are searching independent of a hose line. And what I mean by that is, do Tim and I have a hose line? Absolutely not. If you're still dragging a hose line into every single room, you're not doing anyone any service. If there's a trapped citizen in there, you're hampering yourself. You're hampering the time it takes them to get out. If you're doing that, you need to do some training. You need to get back into the books and the training and the hands-on and the drills and stop. But we have hose lines. We have very good engine companies where we work. There are hose lines going in the same time, a lot of times before us, and they are going to the fire, and we're going to go search, as you pointed out, Jared, as close to the fire back or the floor above the fire. It all depends on arrival, but point being, we pay attention. Everything we talked about tonight comes together. We're listening. There's good size up. As we're responding, if companies are there before us, we're listening and we have a plan. We're an SOG-driven organization, and usually we stick to that so everybody knows where everyone's going to go. Can you call that searching without a hose line? Like, yes, it is, but there's one in the building, and if we need it, it's a radio call away. And furthermore, our SOGs dictate that a backup line is stretched by the third due engine company. So if there's fire on the first floor, the engine's stretching out there, first truck goes and searches the first floor, we end up going the floor above, and we run into some fire, there's a line coming. If they don't come up to the second floor right away, they're protecting the interior stairwell, so we have a way to retreat to. I mean, that's how the majority of the fire service works. Truly searching without a hose line is few and far between. Kind of mentioned in other podcasts, it's a once or twice in a career event, I feel. We're not doing a lot of that, and I would say the majority of the fire service as a whole is not doing a lot of that. So kind of want to iron that out before people get confused with what we're saying. It's a fine line between being aggressive and doing a good job and being reckless. But it's dangerous. You know, no matter what you do, this job's dangerous. We're here for the citizens that pay our salary or we swore out to protect if you're a volunteer, and they expect us to get in there and spar them. And without going on too big of a rant, there's a huge difference between searchable space and survivable space. Like, I hate that term, survivable space. Excuse me. It is not up to us to know what's survivable or not. If we can tolerate it, we can safely get in there and search it, we need to be doing that. That's our job. That's why we pin this badge on our chest every day. And that's what they expect us to do.
Sure. I think a good article comes to mind. I'm going to plug Brother Brian Brush here, the Victims Expecting Search article. If you haven't read that, you need to. It's a great article.
Yeah, like Steve Hybrider teaches with us. He's one of the lead instructors brought up last night on the podcast. Anything that has to do with search, he puts a picture of his family up on the PowerPoint as he's talking about it and says, you know, I want you to search, and I want to search like my family's in there. You know, if you kind of take that mindset into it, I guess it all comes down, be the firefighter you would want rescuing your family or want rescuing you. And you could take that to any aspect of the job. So with all that being said, I'm going to give everyone a chance to kind of go on your rant like I just did mine and wrap up this podcast.
Well, I just had one other thing that came to mind. I remember Jared talking about trust your gut when it comes to, you know, size up and things like that. And I was thinking back to the situation that we had that involved multiple rescues. And as we were masking up, I just thought to myself, for no reason, with no other information, I got to get to the back of this building. And sure enough, that's where everybody was. And I don't know why that thought got into my head. I don't know where it came from. But again, it was just a gut feeling that just so happened to pan out. So if you think, man, I gotta get to the back, or man, I gotta get to those bedrooms, that's usually a great place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially arriving later. You want to try and go where no one's been. If there's already the first truck searching in one part of a house, say it's a ranch or something, like, go opposite of them. I mean, you want to go, you know, whatever possible, go where people haven't been and search what hasn't been searched, in my opinion. Jared, you got anything you want to wrap up with?
No, really the last thing for me would be when it comes to search in general, the fire service has a lot of blood on its hands. Not to create any drama or anything, we have a lot of blood on our hands. We have failed a lot, and it's very fundamental. We start that way with training in Connex boxes with nothing in it, or training with a little bit of fake smoke and using our flashlights. We cheat ourselves endlessly on being proficient at searching. And I'm not, you know, saying I'm better or anything, because 100% guilty here. But just in general, the fire service has miserably failed those that we serve by preparing ourselves for failure, setting ourselves up for failure. I think we're getting better at it. I think, you know, across the nation, we're seeing some phenomenal trainings. There's some good companies out there. There's great articles being written. There's lots of good brothers out there that are doing some great stuff to change that culture. So we're definitely getting there. We're by no means there. Some places have it, some places don't. So I think culturally, you know, if we can change that, then we're going to be far better off. The more realistic we make it, the better off the citizen is, you know. And then to go back a little bit, not saying to act like a reckless, you know, cowboy or anything, but good gosh, we have amazing equipment. Let's use it. So you melt a helmet, you melt the borks, you know, you thermal burn some gear. If it's justifiable because you thought there was life to save, go get it. Go do it. You know, don't be bashful. I think we get a little bit jaded. I think we get a little cold-hearted. I think the job itself makes us that way. I don't want to say we devalue life, but we definitely have an ability to look at it a little less light, you know, because it's not directly related to us. So I think what you said of, you know, act like it was your own family, I think a lot of things would in the past have been done differently, and in the present would get done differently if we truly had that perspective. So not to get on a soapbox, but I'll be done there. But
no, that's what these are for. Get on a soapbox, brother. Well said. My takeaway is there is far more gear ruined in pallet and straw fires every year than dudes doing aggressive searches and pushing it at a house fire. I mean, can't guarantee that. It's not 100% fact. That's just my opinion. But one thing is fact. Firefighters are getting hurt and killed for a lot of other reasons than operating on the fire ground. You know, that's not 100 firemen a year are not dying doing searches at a fire or stretching hose lines and stuff. It's just not happening. It's because they're not taking care of ourselves before the emergency, or lifestyle choices or whatever. We can get into all that later. But if you think about it, if you do everything right and you wear your PPE and you train I mean, accordingly and drill accordingly, operations on the fire ground shouldn't be that dangerous. I mean, it's kind of, not saying it's not, it is, but it's not as bad as it could be made out to be. And somewhere along the line, like you said, we started caring more about ourselves than the people we're supposed to protect. And, all right, before we get going on a whole other podcast topic, Tim.
You guys summed it up. Oh, you want to keep going?
I mean, I don't know if we want to get you on a soapbox. We got another topic for another podcast that we're going to do here shortly. That
we need to be off duty with bourbon and cigars for that one.
Right. That would be a good one.
Well, with that being said, thanks again for the questions. Thanks for the feedback. If you're out, if you're listening to these, please share it with somebody that you think might like it. Please leave reviews. Click the little stars, however you feel, and help us get the word out there so we could do more. I mean, I think we enjoy doing them, and keep the questions coming. We'll answer everyone we can get. If something gets too complicated, be prepared, because I'll put you on the spot, and we'll bring you in on this, and we'll have you on the podcast with us, and you can ask your question straight up. And if you have any other feedback or anything, reach out to Engine House Training. We got the website, the Twitter page, the Facebook page. I think Instagram page is coming shortly, so be on the lookout for that. And unless you guys have anything else, I'm going to call it a wrap, and thank you everyone for listening.
Nope, that's it. Thanks for listening.